the last leader in the Babylonian Empire. What was the king's name? Not Belshazzar, but his father's name. Nabopolassar or something like that. Yeah. I'd have to look at the word, but yeah. But it was his son was running the kingdom for him, and that was Belshazzar. And he had a big party. And what did he? Well, there's a whole bunch of things he did wrong. But when he finally got to the point where he took all the accoutrements, you might say, all the tools, the cups and everything else out of that were from the temple, that was it. Okay, he'd push it too far. And a hand wrote something on the wall, and nobody knew what it was. So, this is where we were, and the queen stepped in. Imagine that. And said, hey, there's a guy that the gods are in. Okay, so they still didn't quite get it, but they knew that he was pretty wise because nobody else could interpret it. So Daniel was brought before the king, and the king said to him, are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father, the king, brought from Judah? I've heard that the spirit of God is in you, and that you have insight, intelligence, and outstanding wisdom. The wise men and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing and to tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. So he does the shorthand version of what's been going on. He doesn't tell them everything, does he? No. So what did Belshazzar credit Daniel's intelligence to, his wisdom, his understanding? To the gods, yeah. Okay? He said, that's something you have, Daniel. The other guys, they're smart too. Why do you say it like that? Why do you think he said it like that? Excuse me? He put his trust in himself, anyhow, yeah. Kind of had it where he wasn't going to recognize a foreign god. He'd been around in the courts, and he never met Daniel. He didn't know who he was. I would say this is a spoiled rich kid that's in charge. That's just kind of, he does his own thing, and everything revolves around me. I'm the king. And he was going to compare men to men. Who's that comparison really between? Yeah, the comparison was wisdom of God and the wisdom of man. That was the difference. And he didn't get it. Matter of fact, he never gets it. So, now I've heard that you're able to give interpretation to solve difficult problems. If you can read the writing and tell me what it means, you will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom. Incentivized, right? What did he know of Daniel? He didn't know much of anything, did he? Yeah, the queen had to say, oh yeah, remember? Remember this guy? He didn't know anything. But he really thought Daniel was going to be impressed with that offer, didn't he? So, woo-hoo, third in the kingdom and purple robe and gold chain around my neck. He was a second. I'm going to get to that in a second. Okay? Why would he not offer him to make him second? Huh?
He was second.
That's right. He was second. He couldn't offer anything better than third. Okay. Then Daniel answered the king. You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. You think it was a good idea to throw back that offer to the king's face? Keep your stuff. Probably wasn't the best of ideas. How old was Daniel, you think? Huh?
Well, he's older. Okay, yes, he's older. Yeah, it depends on how old you are. As older really is. How long have they been in captivity by now? It's the end of their captivity. How long were they to be in captivity? 70 years. He was 14, 15, maybe 19, so he's in his mid to late 80s. He's pretty old. For that time, they didn't live that long, did they? So he's up there. So he's probably at that age, he says, I don't really care. What type of response did he give? Yeah. I said, keep your stuff. I'll read it, but keep your stuff. Don't want it. No, he wasn't. Wasn't about power. Third in the kingdom was a big deal. Even at that time, it was still a big deal. Why would he do it with no reward? Huh? He didn't want the king's stuff. To me, it's just like he had his reward. He had a relationship with God, and he was a slave still. He was to serve the king. That was his job. I mean, it's like, let me incentivize you to do your job. He goes, no, keep your stuff. I'll do my job. So, your majesty, the Most High God, my Most High God, gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations of the peoples, every language, dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. And those he wanted to humble, he humbled. So he's going back and explaining something about his great, either grandfather or great-grandfather to him. How did Nebuchadnezzar achieve all that greatness, splendor, and glory? By God. God decided to give it to him. Oops. How well do you think Belshazzar is receiving this story? So, blah, 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 you know? Don't know, but it's kind of like, okay, I'm waiting for the punchline. Some degree of patience as a king. I mean, he's already being patient, so he's explaining things to him. Where's Daniel headed with this story? Huh? He's going to talk about what's going to happen to Belshazzar, but he's going to talk first about what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. So let's look at that a little bit more. Let's see. When his heart became arrogant, so he's continuing on with the story, and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from the people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys, he ate grass like an ox, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. So it's a pretty strong message he's given to Belshazzar. To Belshazzar. So, where do you think he's headed? Yeah, same thing. Okay? His arrogance cost him his kingdom for a time. When was Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom restored to him? When he acknowledged that God gave this to me, I didn't do it. So, to retrogress, and I put this in yellow, we didn't go through chapter 4. So I picked out parts of chapter 4 to talk about what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Because it's not in the book, right? We jumped over it. Yeah. Then Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. So the king said, Belteshazzar, do not the dream or its meaning alarm you. Belteshazzar answered, "My lord, if only the dream applied to your enemies and its meaning to your adversaries." So the lead up on this one is Nebuchadnezzar's had another dream. And we'll get into what the dream is. But nobody can tell what the dream is. And he calls on Daniel. And this is where he's called on Daniel, and Daniel begins to understand what the dream is about. So, what is that reaction Daniel has to show his relationship with Nebuchadnezzar? He cares for him. They've grown close, you know. He respected them. They've grown close. Oop, did I have another one? Nope. Okay. "The tree you saw, which grew large and strong with its top touching the sky, visible to the whole earth, with beautiful leaves and abundant fruit, providing food for all, giving shelter to the wild animals, and having resting places in its branches for the birds. Your Majesty, you are the tree. You have become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to the distant parts of the earth." How big is this tree? In his dream, it's huge. It's visible over the whole earth. It's huge. Yeah, it's like one of those commercials. What does a tree provide? Shelter, birds, food. Okay. Food, lodging, protection from wild animals and the environment. Provides everything they need. Why a tree? What happens to every tree? There's a lot of things with the tree of life, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But this particular tree here uses to how is God's kingdom compared to a tree? What does he usually use? Huh? No. Rock. A stone, a mountain, something like that, isn't it? Particularly as we get later into Daniel, it does talk about the mountain and the stone not cut with hands. Okay? Trees have a lifetime. They're not eternal. God's kingdom is eternal. "Your Majesty saw a holy one, a messenger coming down from the heaven and saying, 'Cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump, bound with iron and bronze in the grass of the field, while its roots remain in the ground. Let it be drenched with the dew of heaven. Let him live with the wild animals until 7 times pass by for him.'" So he got to the bad part on the tree. Who or what is a messenger? Probably an angel. Okay. Who's a messenger from? Who are messengers always from that are angels? They're from God. This is easy. What was the message? What did you say? Cut down the tree. Cut down the tree. Okay? And bind it. But just the particular point, he hasn't really interpreted too much. How does the subject of the interpretation change? No, he's not. He says, cut down the tree. So he's talking tree, tree, tree. You get to the last verse. Let him be drenched with the dew. Let him live with the wild animals. It changes from the tree to him. Who's him? Nebuchadnezzar. Okay. This is the interpretation, Your Majesty. And this is the decree the Most High has issued against my lord, the king. You will be driven away from the people and will live with the animals. You will eat grass like the ox and be drenched with the dew of heaven. 7 times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and give them to anyone he wishes. The command to leave the stump of the tree with its roots means that your kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. So it was a warning. Hadn't happened yet. So who's the him? We said that before. Nebuchadnezzar. What will cause the curse to be lifted? When he acknowledges God as the God of heaven. He has to do what to do that? He has to humble himself. That's hard for this Babylonian king. That's hard for any king in this time, is to say, I'm not in charge. I'm not the most powerful in the earth. I have to humble myself to God. That was going to be hard. And then what happens when he humbles himself? He gets his kingdom back. Be restored to him. So, therefore, your majesty, be pleased to accept my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right, and your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed. It may be that your prosperity will continue. So that was Daniel, wasn't it? That wasn't an interpretation of anything. That was, again, showing the relationship Daniel had with Nebuchadnezzar. What was his advice? Do what is right, okay? To do what is right. What was his real problem? What?
Arrogance.
Arrogance, yeah. To me, it was his heart. He had a heart problem. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, so he did okay for a year. He was doing okay. As the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, is this not the great Babylon I have built as royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty? Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. This is what I has decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from the people and will live with wild animals. You will eat the grass like the ox. 7 times will pass before you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms of earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. It's kind of interesting when he heard those words, he didn't just say, he is, but it was pretty quick. The judgment was going to come, huh? He gave him a year to kind of say, you need to straighten out your act a little bit. And I don't know whether this was the final nail in the coffin, but this was probably been building towards this. And God gave him the dream to say, be wary, this could happen. So, what was it that Nebuchadnezzar did wrong? He had an eye complex, yep. He only liked me, myself, and I. Okay? Arrogance, and he disregarded God. He was arrogant, and he just said, I did it. God didn't do this. I did. Look what I did. Yep. Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from his people and ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. That was probably something to really see. What'd he look like? He looked kind of weird. He looked like a beast. He did not look like a man. God made him to say, you don't look like a man anymore. Oops. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, what have you done? Who did say, what have you done? That's a big story about. who said, God, come here. I want you to explain to me just what I did wrong. It was Job, okay? And then he got about two chapters of, where were you when I did, and fill in the blank. How did Nebuchadnezzar recognize God? How much did he recognize God? Pretty. He recognizes the breadth and the width and the depth of the power of God. Now, that's what he's going to respect, isn't he? What did he leave out? Well, he left out I, but what did he leave out about God? What does Peter say God is? God is love. He left out God's compassion. He left out God's patience, and he's had a lot of patience with Nebuchadnezzar. He left out all those positive traits. Everything up here is power. Nothing can withstand his power. But he really still doesn't understand God, does he? He's someone to be feared. He knows everything, so he's omnipotent. He knows that. He's all-powerful, but he doesn't understand what motivates God, does he? Yeah, he knew that's God's stuff, but if he looked at God as a powerful God that can take me to heal, he'd kind of stay away from that. But he never got the compassion of the God. Of course, the dreams that he had were this one. He had the dream about the statue with all the pieces. So he had some dreams. He communicated with them. But everything to kind of reinforce, you're powerful, king. This one here said, you're going to be humbled, king. But it all was power. He didn't get that facet of God that's probably most critical to understand his love and his compassion and his patience with us as his children. Nebuchadnezzar never got that. It's unfortunate. But he praised him. Honored, glorified, recognized his dominion and kingdom. He's all powerful, but the message was his power, his eternal nature. But it didn't really touch on what I would call the most critical facets of who God is and what he does for us. At the same time, my sanity restored, my honor and splendor returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors, nobles, sought me out, and I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now, I can Nebuchadnezzar praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven, because everything he does is right, and all his ways are just, and those who walk in pride he is able to humble. And I probably would have put something on the end, like me. So to what extent was Nebuchadnezzar restored? Remember, the tree was bound with brass and iron. What happens normally when you cut a tree down? He dies. Okay, this one didn't die. This one grew back. It was greater than before. The tree was big to start with, but when you look at it from the standpoint, it was even more. It was even greater. Whatever greater was, whatever their measure of greater was, and I don't know what that was, it was greater. God was good to Nebuchadnezzar. And he recognized that, okay, he's got the gods in him. He knew it wasn't he got the gods in him. He's got this God of heaven in him that's more powerful than any other god that exists. Whether he threw away the other gods, doubtful. A little heat there. How had Nebuchadnezzar's view of God changed, Daniel's God changed? Still Daniel's God. He knew he was no better than number two, and probably not that. But for him to praise him and extol him as the God of heaven was a jump. And he never would have got there, I don't think, if he hadn't have been humbled. Isn't that kind of same with us? Because he had to do a lot to get humbled, yeah. Some of us do too, don't we? Okay. Is to say, I know it's not all about me. And with Nebuchadnezzar, it was all about me, wasn't it? It was all about me. And he got humbled. And God, if you will, did him a favor, saying, okay, it ain't all about you. And you need to understand who I am. The way we find out about that is we see it in others. We understand what he did for us, right? What does Nebuchadnezzar say that relates to Belshazzar? Yep. Those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. And Belshazzar, well, let's see how well he was listening. So I'm back to chapter 5. So I kind of explained what Daniel meant when he said, this is what happened to your father. This is what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. So that's what happened to him. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. He knew all this. He knew exactly what had gotten either his grandfather, his great-grandfather, in hot water with God. He knew it. I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, it was for seven times. Seven probably meant till he completely understood who God was and his relationship to God. But here is something that was probably told around the table. This is what happened to Nebuchadnezzar, okay? And you should have seen the way he looked. He knew this story. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You have the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praise the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in your hand your life and all your ways. Boy, did you mess up. Big time. So how well do you think he knew that story? And how well do you think he knew of Daniel? Should he have known of Daniel? I mean, you had two dreams. The first dream was in the first year, I think, of his reign. And what was Nebuchadnezzar going to do to all of the soothsayers and the magicians and everything who couldn't do it? He's going to kill them, okay? So this is someone who, when they started the captivity in Babylon, was a central figure, became number two in the kingdom. Now, somewhere along the lines, I guess when Nebuchadnezzar died, and you went through a couple kings pretty fast. I mean, boom, boom. And I think one was the son, and one was the uncle, and then you went into the grandson, which is Nabo something, whatever his name was. And Belshazzar is his great-grandson. So you went into that particular part of the kingdom, and Belshazzar has been ruling for a while, okay, not as long as Nebuchadnezzar did, but he's been ruling for a while. But these stories should have been passed down. I mean, that's a close-knit family. So how did Belshazzar regard the God of heaven? Disregard. Total totalness. I mean, if you look at what it says, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. It's not total disregard. It's, I'm at war with you, okay? I don't have to pay attention to you. It hasn't happened to me yet. It's kind of like, okay, so far so good, you know, I'm doing fine. And what does that what does it tend to do when you don't get admonished when you make that mistake? Huh? You get more brazen. It reinforces your thinking, crazy thinking, but thinking to say, oh, didn't happen then, I can do it again, I can do it some more. And that's kind of the trap that we have to be aware of, is just because you don't get slapped down doesn't mean that it's not separating you from God. And it doesn't mean that you're against God, because you might get to the point where you are against the God. He was totally against God. He treated God with contempt. When he took those cups out and you said, let's everybody party and use the cups from the temple, that was contemptible. Who do you honor? The gods, okay? The gods of man. Not the God of heaven, the gods of man. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is the inscription that was written. Mighty, mighty, tekel, upharsin. Here is what these words mean. Mighty, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Peres, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. So he interprets the handwriting. Nobody else could. How does this message differ in its delivery than Nebuchadnezzar's? No chances. Okay. He didn't give time to think about it, to reflect. There was no promise. A messenger came. How clear was the message to Nebuchadnezzar when he said, look at all the things I did? When he got the message, how clear was it? It was clear. It was a messenger, an angel. He talked to him and he said, you did it. Here it goes. This particular one, it's not as clear. Nobody can read what's on the wall. Certainly not Belshazzar, but Belteshazzar, which is Daniel's Chaldean name, can. What's the message's bottom line? It will humble you, okay? You lose. Big time, you lose. All right, oops. Your kingdom is going to be stripped away. It's gone. And it's going to be given to the Medes Persians. That's a big difference in contrast to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, your kingdom was taken away, but it was preserved. And when he came... Yeah, you're not going to walk away from this one. Why is he losing his kingdom? Huh? He didn't know who put him there. It was keeping him there. What did I write? He didn't learn from history. What is the phrase? Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Okay. And he's arrogant. I mean, spoiled little rich kid probably was a good way to explain what his mindset was. In his entire lifetime, you think he'd been denied anything? His dad was still alive, and he's sitting on the throne. His head has got to be huge. And he didn't take advantage of what had gone on. And there. I don't know how whether there's any relationship between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar before he took office, before Nebuchadnezzar died, but he didn't take advantage of anything that could have been learned from those stories. He didn't learn. Last slide. Then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple, a gold chain was placed around his neck, and he proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain, and Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. So, we're done. We're done fast at this particular point. So what was Belshazzar's response? He kept his promise. Of course, Daniel said, keep your stuff. Don't want it. Not interested. And he still went and he said, okay, this is what I said I was going to do to the magicians and the interpreters, and I'm going to be consistent. I'll give it to you. Daniel's probably going, oh, well. What was missing in Belshazzar's response? Any acknowledgement of God. Any acknowledgement that, I'm sorry. I didn't know what I was doing. Or I did it. I was wrong. There is no sense of remorse on Belshazzar's part whatsoever. And I always thought it was interesting. He did follow through on his promise, but he just got really bad news. And he rewards the guy who gave him really bad news. I thought that was always kind of ironic.
That phrase, I can read the handwriting on the wall. It's from this, and it still permeates our society now thousand years later.
Yep. It's done, and it's never going to be good news. It usually implies, with the phrase now, he couldn't read the handwriting on the wall. It has to do with some demise that's associated with you. You know, you're going to fail in some way, and you just never saw it coming. No humility. And that was the whole point that Daniel was related to his great-grandfather and was relating to him was humility is going to get you in trouble. I mean, lack of humility is going to get you in a bunch of trouble. Arrogance is going to lead you in a path that you're going to get crosswise with God. Guaranteed. How quickly did the interpretation come to be? That night. He was dead that night. What did the beginning of the reign of the Mede Persians signify? The end of the Babylonian Empire. That's true. What else? Particularly as it relates to the Jews. The beginning of the return back to Jerusalem. It was the end of the 70 years of captivity. That's what it marked. Because they were to be in captivity in the Babylonian Empire, not the Mede-Persian Empire. Who was it that actually took Babylon? See, we've got time, so I can ask some history questions. Kinda. Darius is the Mede. Who was the Persian? Cyrus the Great was the Persian. Okay. Cyrus the Great. What was the relationship between Cyrus and Darius? Father-in-law, son-in-law. That's why it was a joined kingdom between the two of them. Father-in-law, son-in-law. And how did Cyrus take Babylon? I mean, this is a fortified city. But what was their weakness? He started, what'd you say? What river ran through there? What river ran through Babylon? Euphrates ran through there. And Cyrus redirected the river and marched underneath the walls and took it from inside. Bam, real fast. No, we don't. And they were kind of a, you know, I think they were this, what is it, subjective? They were the secondary part of the partnership. Persian was the real power, and the Medes were the also co-regents or co-reign. And I think what happened was the head of the Persian Empire, the heart of it, the capital, was not Babylon. Was back in Persia. So Darius, I think, was left there in the Babylonian capital as co-regent with Cyrus. But the guy who was in power until he died was Cyrus. And Darius, which we'll get back to him later on with Daniel and the lion's den, we have another, that's a couple chapters away, but we're going to talk more about it. But you have to understand the relationship between the kings, particularly in the Mede-Persian Empire, and who's who. And that helps you when you go into the book of Ezra and the book of Nehemiah, because you understand who's who. And that's relevant to the Persian Empire versus the Babylonian Empire. Next week, we're going to shift gears. We're going to go into the Persian Empire and what's going on for a couple of chapters. And then we're going to snap back to the Babylonian Empire in a chapter, and then we're going to snap forward. So we're going to hopefully not give everybody whiplash. Thanks. 6, I believe. Yeah, 6. Excuse me?